This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Sachin Doshi, Managing Director and Head of Private Real Estate Investment Asia Pacific at Dutch Pension Fund Asset Manager APG. In this role, Doshi is responsible for all aspects of the 430 billion euro under management pension asset manager's private real estate investments in Asia Pacific and has led investments in Chinese logistics real estate firm Yishan Redwood and Shanghai-based commercial property developer Chongbang. Doshi spoke with me yesterday in Hong Kong. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Sachin. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Thank you.
3 years ago, I talked to your predecessor. Now we're in 2016. A lot has changed over the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. So first, can you tell us a little bit about APG's Asia investments? How has they changed in the past 3 years?
Sure. Firstly, thanks for having me. Fundamentally, our strategy has changed quite significantly over the last 3 years. You know, when you probably spoke to, you know, some of my colleagues before, a lot of our strategy was focused towards investing in funds or investing in programs on a pan-Asian basis. What we have consciously done over the last 3 years is move away from the commingled pan-Asian strategies and move more towards country and city-specific investment platforms with local partners in each of the key markets that we operate in.
Why did you make this change?
A couple of reasons. From a long-term investor standpoint, it is quite important for us to be able to build scale in the investments that we are in. A lot of the times in Asia Pacific especially, partner selection is incredibly important. When you go into commingled or multi-sector, multi-country strategies, you don't necessarily get the best partners in each of those specific countries or geographies that you invest in. By going to a more structured and a more bespoke strategy where we work with some of the best partners in each of these geographies, not only do we get access to capability that we are looking for to execute the strategy, but also from a repeat business standpoint, it makes it a lot easier for us to commit more capital and invest more capital with these partners to build scale.
You see this trend as part of a broader change on the part of institutional investors to move towards this direction?
I think certainly a lot of institutional investors are moving into this direction. But to be able to do that, obviously, you also need local capability. You need a team on the ground and also the ability to find these partners. So a lot of the small to mid-size institutions will still probably continue to invest in the commingled fund space, but the larger institutions and larger sovereign wealth funds, I think, will and are moving towards this more direct operator-led approach.
Just really quickly, can you just give us a little bit sense of your Asia portfolio for APG as a whole and also specifically your China asset allocation?
Sure. So in terms of APG as a whole, maybe we can talk about that first. Real estate is about 9% of our total assets under management.
In Asia Pacific.
This is globally.
Oh, global. Okay.
And about a quarter of that is in Asia Pacific. So in Asia Pacific, we invest in listed real estate companies, developers, and REITs. And we also do private investments. So I take care of the private investment part. Our total AUM in Asia at the moment in real estate is circa 8 billion euro. About half of that is in private real estate investments across Australia, Japan, India, and the triangle of countries between these three.
So it has grown in AUM. I think last time it was around 6 billion.
It has certainly grown. So the real estate about 3 years ago was 6 billion in Asia Pacific. especially on the private side, we've seen a lot of growth in our portfolio.
Right, and I think 3 years ago, the private real estate portfolio was less than half, or maybe one third, so now it has taken a larger share.
It used to be about 2 billion euro at that time, but it has certainly taken a larger share, and it's for a couple of reasons. Obviously, because of performance, the NAV of the existing investments has grown, but also with some of the new partnerships that allow us to build much greater scale, that portfolio has grown as well.
Now, let's look at the real estate sector in Asia Pacific. When you look across different countries, different segments, market segments, where do you see the most attractive opportunities right now?
That's a very difficult question to answer.
It's
a great question though, because that's ultimately what we're trying to do. And the reason why I say it's a difficult question to answer is because every country has a different risk profile. And every sector within these countries, could be and is at a different point in the cycle as well. But when we think about Asia Pacific, really the biggest markets are the ones that we tend to focus on. Australia and China are obviously two very important markets for us. We have increasingly been allocating capital into India as well, but India is never going to be a big part of the portfolio. And then some of the other countries like Hong Kong, Singapore, Korea, are places that we have exposure to.
In China, you have focused on logistic real estate, and now you just did a deal with Chengbang coming into commercial property. Yeah. So you've definitely singled out specific subsegments of the market.
Sure. So if we talk about China for a moment, a very conscious decision we made about 18 months ago is that we wanted to focus on sectors that we believed would be long-term beneficiaries of the kind of shift in the economy from being investment-led to consumer-led. So what this really means is lifestyle, F&B, retail, e-commerce. These are sectors that we think will continue to grow over a much longer period of time. And that's why we invested in logistics with Yishan. With Chengbang in retail and commercial, this was a much more targeted strategy. We believe Shanghai is already and is going to continue to become a more important consumption and major metropolitan urban center in the world. Retail, commercial are very critical elements of building a city. And the way Chengbang operates, it is very focused on lifestyle. It is very focused on entertainment. It's about bringing people together in a city that is, it's a large city with very little green space. So Chengbang, they create their retail malls, not really as malls, but as indoor-outdoor space where people can come in and spend the whole day.
We have to mention, of course, Chengbang was founded by a former Shui Lan executive, so very experienced local Chinese property entrepreneur. Yeah. Tell us a little bit on the background of the deal. How did this three-party come together?
Sure. So we'd been speaking to Chengbang for about 3 years already. So a few years ago, we explored potentially doing something with them. But at the time, we couldn't really put a structure in place that worked for them or for us. But over this time, kept very close contact with Henry, Henry Cheng, who's the CEO of the company. They went back and thought about how they wanted to grow the company. And in this time, we also had a bit of refinement on our views and how we wanted to approach the retail sector in Shanghai. Now, we again got talking about a year and a half ago. And after that, it was both parties had a very aligned view on how the company needed to grow. And that's how we came together. But Henry's experience, obviously, having been instrumental in conceptualizing Shanghai, the Xintiandi project, is really even now a benchmark project in lifestyle and retail in China. And he brought that forward-looking mindset as to how he believes retail is going to evolve in Shanghai. And we there was a lot of resonance in his view and what we thought the future of retail in China is going to be. The other thing that we really like about Chengbang was an incredible focus on quality and the product offering. So in the company's history, rather than building 50 projects, they were very selective, and they picked low base and high growth regions to build their malls in. And this is a strategy that we like a lot. It was very targeted to specific catchments. They were built in a way that you walk in and you actually want to spend the whole day there. Very few people have done that.
What about exits? What's your thoughts on potential IPOs or what other ways of exit?
So as a long-term investor, we're very happy to build this company out with all the programs that we put in place, whether that's with Yishang Redwood or with Chongbang. An IPO could be a potential exit, but it's not what we're necessarily kind of working towards constantly. It's one of those things, if a great opportunity does arise for an exit, we're also a rational investor, we would take that opportunity. But we're also very happy to have very long-term positions in these companies in private structures.
So what is the process of APG exiting investments? You're not like a typical fund which has a 10-year fund life. You can just basically hold on until a time you think it's the best time to exit, or how does that work?
It's a couple of things. So obviously, we do have that flexibility that a lot of the kind of finite term funds do not have, where they have to exit investments, whether it's a good time to exit or not. We have the luxury, obviously, of being able to hold real estate across cycles. Ultimately, what we want to do is we want to own the best real estate in each of the markets that we're in. And whether that's in a private structure for a very long period of time, we're happy to do that. We're happy with that whole period being very long. But by the same token, if someone wants to acquire a piece of real estate at a valuation where we believe we would be naive not to sell, we're also happy to sell. But we look at a couple of things. We look at the opportunity cost of staying invested in a particular investment versus the ability to maybe recycle capital, maybe sit on the sidelines sometimes and re-enter the market if we see potential dislocations in the market. So it really, there's no hard and fast rule. We are flexible, but generally we are looking at long-term holds in all these positions that we are in.
Now let's talk about APG's other giant investment in Yishang. You were an early investor in Yishang and invested twice, a very large amount of money, and the company is now planning potentially an IPO later this year.
Yes. So with Yishang, obviously, Warburg Pincus was a private equity firm that was invested with Yishang, and they founded Yishang with the entrepreneurs, Jeff Chen and Mr. Sun. In 2014, I believe it was, 2014, we started talking with Yishang early in the year. We'd spent a lot of time looking at how we wanted to approach the Chinese logistics sector. One option was obviously to go with some of the big logistics developers like GLP or AMB Prologis or Goodman, but they already had capital partners that they were working with. We felt we wanted to also get access to the management team. Rather than just setting up a fund or a JV, we actually wanted to invest in the company. So that investment was a two-step investment. We took a stake in Yishang, the management company, and we also set up a joint venture with them to basically build out the entire development pipeline that Yishang had in China for logistics. So that was quite a sizable investment. We then topped up that investment basically a year after making the initial commitment of capital, because the capital was called to projects that we liked. And since then, obviously, Yishang has also merged with Redwood to create Yishang Redwood. So in aggregate, we have over $1 billion invested or committed to Yishang Redwood across the management company and the joint venture that we have with them.
So Goldman Sachs in 2013 made a pre-IPO loan to Yishang.
Yeah.
Now the company is planning an IPO. So was the IPO plan delayed?
It wasn't really delayed. Look, I think with an IPO, obviously there's a few things to take into account. One is, what is the state of maturity of the assets that you have under development? The other thing is obviously market conditions. With Yishang Redwood, Yishang expanded into Korea in 2015 as well. So that was in 2014. And then, in 2015, we set up a JV with that entity in Korea as well. So obviously, there's a few pieces of growth that the company was embarking on. And we felt that as a pan-Asian logistics platform, having significant presence in China, in Japan, in Singapore, and in Korea, and over time maybe other markets as well, was a much better and differentiated proposition. And it was, a strategic plan for the company to go down this path.
So, what other countries could Yishang go into in the future?
Because there's nothing earmarked at the moment, but obviously, there are markets like Australia, Indonesia, other markets in Southeast Asia that over time, this platform could look at as well.
Since APG invested in Yishang, what did you help the company with?
Sure. Look, a couple of things. Obviously, again, the management team is the team that really runs the business on a day-to-day basis. But obviously, a couple of things we did do and did help the company with. The expansion into Korea is something that we supported from the start. We also, really crafted the whole JV that the company has in Korea with ourselves and CPPIB. That's an initiative that, us along with Warburg Pincus led. So again, it's more at a strategic level, at the board level. We provide input on new markets that the company is looking at, because as an organization like as big as ours, we do have investments in a lot of different markets and different geographies, and we try to bring all that together for the benefit of the company.
The two entrepreneurs who helped together with Warburg Pincus set up the company Yishang, Sun Dongping is a very mysterious entrepreneur. There's not anything that you can find on him on the internet. So, do you know him personally? What's his experience? It's not, can't even find his CV.
Sure. Yeah, look, Mr. Sun keeps a low profile. But, we obviously have a great relationship. We spend a lot of time together with Mr. Sun and with Jeff Shen, both of them. Mr. Sun's background is in construction. He was intimately involved in, building a lot of the logistics that was built in and around Shanghai in the first wave of logistics capital that went into the country. So he's got deep experience in logistics contracting.
APG has stayed away from China's residential and office market. Do you continue to not like those segments?
Look, I think with the office, selectively, we do like certain assets in Shanghai and in Beijing. Obviously, Beijing is a much more difficult market to access because it is dominated by the SOEs. In Shanghai, there's been a lot of transaction activity on the office side. But again, we're very selective about what office assets to own, because we see office as being a very cyclical asset class. There is still, considerable amount of supply coming in certain pockets of Shanghai. But if the right opportunity comes along at the right price, we would be open to it. When it comes to residential, we're a little bit differently minded on this, purely for the reason that the turn of capital is very quick in residential. As a long-term investor, we're not necessarily looking for, an 18 or 24 month turn on capital. That maybe suits the kind of finite life funds a bit better than it suits us. And also because of the policy risk involved in doing residential, that is something that is very difficult to underwrite. And my philosophy is, if you don't understand something, you should not invest in it.
Last time, I think car park was mentioned as one of the potential areas you would get into in China. Mm-hmm. But so far, not any deals have been done in this segment. Are you planning, or have you looked and didn't find anything you like?
So we've looked at a few things in the car park space. We've made some investments as well. But another thing that we found out about car parks is it's very difficult to build scale, because each deal, the capital required is relatively small. And also increasingly, it is becoming harder to find, parcels of land in cities where you can build car parks, because there is usually a better alternative use for the real estate. So again, you know, it's one of those things, you know, where we've learned and, you know, through experience that perhaps it's not a sector that in which we will have a very large position.
So far, APG's investment in China, logistic real estate, commercial, what's in the deal pipeline?
So at the moment, we're very happy with the two programs that we have. They're very active programs. So we're constantly looking at new investments, you know, both with Yishang Redwood as well as with Chongbang. We see those two playing out over the next 2 to 3 years. In terms of new opportunities, as I said, you know, we're looking at selectively office in Shanghai and Beijing, but nothing imminent in the pipeline. Some of the other sectors we are beginning to educate ourselves on is senior housing / the healthcare space. We believe the macro fundamentals support such a strategy, but we obviously need to spend a lot more time to understand the regulatory framework and who the partners are with whom we can execute such a strategy as well.
Interesting. I mean, in China, it's almost like a non-existent or very, very nascent market.
Yeah, it is a very nascent market. So again, I don't think it's something we will commit capital to in the next 12 to 18 months. Before we make investments, we spend a lot of time researching the opportunity as well and making sure that we understand the landscape a lot better and who the partners are a lot better before we go down the path of looking at something specific.
Before 2015, for almost 10 years, RMB has been appreciating, which served as very well for US dollar investment investors in China. But now the trend has reversed. This will obviously present some risk. So how are you managing this currency risk?
Certainly, look, that's a very good point. If you spoke to investors, you know, maybe 3 years ago, everyone was underwriting the renminbi to continue to appreciate. We're a euro-denominated investor, not a US dollar-denominated investor, but obviously, you know, currency risk is something that we look at very closely and is something that's very important to us. But also, it's only one part of the overall risk puzzle in an investment. So when we underwrite new opportunities or our partnerships, we look at the total risk-adjusted return potential of a particular opportunity, taking into account factors like currency risk. So that's a risk that, you know, we have to underwrite, but they've also created a very good ecosystem for businesses to succeed.
Do you use any tools to hedge the currency risk?
We don't hedge the renminbi as we speak. Obviously, you know, we try and take local currency debt on our ventures to provide a bit of a natural hedge on our equity. But the other thing is, you know, our capital usually goes in over a period of time and it comes out over a period of time as well. So we get some sort of an averaging effect on currency anyways.
So lastly, always ask this question for anyone I interview, which is investment lessons you learned from your mistakes. I think last time it was mentioned about the use of leverage. I wonder, number one, how are you using leverage now? And also, secondly, your personal investment mistakes and the lessons you've learned.
Look, leverage is something we are very prudent about. So we try not to use high leverage. We're looking for underlying real estate returns rather than, you know, financially engineered returns through leverage. So in most of the programs that we've put in place, our leverage is, you know, well below 40% on a loan-to-value basis. And that's a strategy that we will continue to have. In terms of mistakes, look, I think in emerging Asia especially, the most critical thing is selecting the right partner. If your partner selection is wrong, pretty much nothing is going to go to plan. So we spend, and I personally spend, a lot of time before we make an investment just getting to know the organizations that we're working with inside and out, trying to build a more personal and deeper relationship with our partners, which involves, you know, traveling to see them more frequently. Even after making the investment, I would try to see every partner at least once a month. And the reason for that is, if you don't care about your investment, your partner is not going to care about your investment.
So just one last question, that's just sort of the Asia Pacific real estate portfolio. What is the average return for the past, 5-10 years?
Sure. If you look at over the last 3 years and over the last 5 years, we've done in excess of 14%.
Well, what about for the longer term, past 10 years?
We haven't had an Asian portfolio for 10 years. We really set up the office in Hong Kong in 2007.
Right.
So if you look at, you know, since inception, it's north of 10%.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.